Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly. Can you hear me?
Oh, that's much better.
Awesome. Yes. Are we good?
Yep.
All right, cool. Hi, Tasnim. How are you doing? How are you feeling?
Hi, happy. I'm doing okay. I'm feeling okay, thankfully.
Are you getting any load shedding?
Oh my goodness. Getting load shedding. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Twice a day, and then it's scheduled for thrice a day.
Mm.
And yeah, it is so disruptive at the moment.
Welcome to African Voices in the Energy Space, a podcast by Ahadi Collaboration. So who is Ahadi and what does Ahadi CoLab do? Ahadi CoLab is a source of information and a platform that fosters collaboration within its ranks. So the formation has presented possibilities for energy professionals in the broad spectrum from trade unions to business entities. It is our belief that there is an opportunity to reach consensus on how to take forward previously identified collective activities, including research into the impact of changing energy procurement policies on municipalities and approaches to resolving ESCOM's debt. Just so that we get to know our members from Ahadi, our first one is Happy Kambule. He studied law at the University of Johannesburg and was recognized by the British Council as a global change maker and international climate champion in 2008 and 2010, respectively. In 2013, he was selected as one of the Mail and Guardian's most coveted 200 Young South Africans of the Year. Currently, Happy is an official party delegate to the UNFCCC and negotiates response measures for South Africa at the international climate negotiations. Happy is a political advisor at Greenpeace Africa, a non-exec director at Mansa Advisory, and he has recently been appointed on the Presidential Climate Change Committee as a commissioner.
Describe myself. Man, I'm from the hood. Mpumekasi. Just living life in the 21st century and trying to make a change, man.
Our first guest on our first show is Tasneem Isop, who is an expert on climate, energy, poverty, social justice issues, and is the founding director of the Energy Democracy Initiative in South Africa. Ms. Isop has a significant amount of experience in the climate movement. She has held various senior government positions in South Africa. She was a global climate policy and strategy leader for the environmental NGO, WWF International, and served as the head of delegation for the organization at the UNFCCC, including at the Paris COP. During this period, she also served on the board of the Global Call for Climate Action and was an active participant in the work of CAN International. Tasneem is also serving her second term as commissioner in the National Planning Commission of South Africa. She was also recently appointed to the board of SANParks, the leading conservation authority in South Africa. Before joining WWF in 2008, she held the positions of Provincial Minister for the Environment, Planning and Economic Development, and Provincial Minister of Transport, Public Works and Property Management in the Western Cape. She was a trade unionist in COSATU for the Western Cape and is a qualified teacher. Her vast management and leadership experience includes convening and building consensus around common goals among stakeholders from government, labor, business and communities, building collaborative partnerships, working in virtual teams across cultures, and building strong organizational governance with an emphasis on finance.
How would you describe
yourself? Are you asking me how I describe myself?
Yes,
me,
yes. That's putting you on the spot.
I think you describe me as a boomer probably. And maybe I I honestly consider myself and would describe myself as a social justice activist. Or just a justice activist.
Aluta.
That's it. All my life, when we lived through apartheid and fought apartheid.
Mm.
After that, you know, even when I was in parliament and then as a minister, I considered myself an activist. We had to remedy the injustices of the past through our political work that we could do. And we have immense power when you're in parliament and in ministries, etc. And then I come full cycle again back into the world of civil society, again, you know, a justice activist. So if that's, if I'm forced to describe myself, I would probably describe like that.
Yeah. So
whether boomer, justice activist.
So whether you're in parliament, whether you are in the international networks, wherever you are in your own organization, wherever, people must know that that title helps just to describe the situation there, that hat. But the person they're talking to is a social justice activist, Tasneem Esso.
In our first episode, Happy Kambule, member of Ahadi, chats to Tasneem Esop. The big question for this episode is, how did South Africa become the continent's biggest polluter? Looking forward to this conversation.
But, I mean, it's pretty weird that we're the largest polluter in Africa, and we've got all this coal reserves. We're burning a lot of coal. We've got all the solar potential and wind potential, but we're getting all this load shedding. Like, how did we get here?
Well, look, I mean, I think that the current problems with load shedding, et cetera, you know, there is a combination of factors. I think, of course, firstly, I do think that Eskom, you know, has just not managed in these past years to really do proper planning and management of the electricity system. But I think if we look back a little bit at the bigger picture, I think as a country, you know, recognizing, of course, when we got our freedom in 1994, that our immediate needs was to, of course, take care of the majority of people who were denied electricity, did not have full access to electricity, etc. So that was, you know, what we did with our electricity system in the country, and planning for that future wasn't probably top of mind. But as the years progressed, you know, and especially as more and more, you know, the kind of science coming out about climate change, the fact that the solutions actually also presented themselves, these issues of climate, the fact that fossil fuels is the key driver of climate change, and the fact that the solution of renewable energy was there many years ago, right? It's not new at all. Of course, in those days, renewable energy was still quite unaffordable. It was, the technology was unpredictable. But, you know, for many years now, all of that is a matter of, you know, shifts already. And so when a government and decision, you know, utilities like Eskom are not keeping in tune with these kinds of developments, global developments, and remain very focused within this country. And, you know, we there seems to be the sense that coal is going to be here forever for us. That is a problem. And so I think that our problem was that our decision makers, our policy makers, our agencies are not looking at evidence-based decision-making. And we could have changed our path many years ago. It's, you know, so being in this crisis now gets traced back to decisions that was made about, well, the future of our energy system in the country and the fact that we still thought we can have coal forever and ever. You know, this is our big resource, etc. But also, you know, more fundamental to that, I think we also missed an opportunity to revisit the structure of our economy. So we've just continued with the, you know, the kind of economic structure we inherited, the kind of dependence on a primary sector-based economy, you know, mining is supposed to be the driver of economic growth, and all of that has changed as well. And so we didn't really spend time as a country of what kind of development do we need, and therefore what kind of pathways would we need to take back then that would have not have resulted in this. And so that whole dependence and support continuing for a minerals and energy complex is something that we are suffering from today.
And to say it in another way is that we have a primary, well, rather our economy is based on extraction, right? It's all about the primary industry. And at the heart of that is the coal beneficiation process. But I mean, we've got all these plans, right? We've had plans, we've had policies, we've also had strategies that are there that are talking about thinking global, acting local, you know, local, that whole terminology thing going on. We've been doing these things. People around the world saying South Africa's plans, in most cases, after they're done or while they're being developed, are one of the best. They indicating, signaling a good approach. But how are we still one of the largest polluters? How are we still hungry for more coal and stuck in a situation where, and maybe to give an anecdote on this one, is that we've got the highest electricity and liquid fuel use in the continent, but we're still suffering from energy insecurity, like, and still polluting more than any other African country. How are we still here when we've had the plants? And I heard you saying that, like, we're not keeping up with global trends and taking into account what's happening in the global space. But at the same time, we're always touted as good policymakers, you know, always thinking things through, always having the right signal when developing strategies.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to African Voices in the Energy Space, a podcast by Ahadi Colab. In today's episode, we listen in as Happy Kambule chats to Tasneem Isop.
I think if there was an Oscar award for great policies and great plans and great strategies, that would go to South Africa, to be quite honest. And yes, and there's, I'm not saying there's, you know, a lack of good faith in doing that. We do come up with good plans and policies. What we are sorely, sorely lacking is good implementation. And I mean, I think though it's not just about the lack of implementation, I don't think we must underestimate the power of vested interests. So the other piece that I wanted to talk about, how did we get here? Like in this very short path, the massive scale of corruption that is now coming out of, you know, the Zondo Commission and other, you know, news pieces, investigations, is unbelievable. And it reflects the kind of insidious vested interest that is out there in the sector as well. Those who are going to benefit from our continued coal dependency, the coal mining interest, the contracts in terms of the value chain, transport contracts, etc., etc. Those vested interests should not be underestimated. And what is the worst injustice of all, I would say, Happy, is, you know, there's been this massive corruption. So that's beside all the problems around mismanagement of and maintenance problems, etc., by ESCOM itself. Then you have this corruption where ESCOM gets bailed out by the state continuously, huge amounts. That's public money, that's taxpayers' money. Then they get agreement for electricity price hikes. And in the end, it is the poor in South Africa who are suffering the most. So yes, we can be really happy with, you know, our energy access in terms of the statistics, you know, the numbers, the majority of people have access to energy, to electricity specifically. But what we are facing more and more is increasing levels of energy poverty. People just cannot afford electricity. And yet we, you know, the citizens of this country, we paying taxes, we paying for our electricity, but we're not getting the service. And Eskom gets bailed out time and time again, and we essentially paying for the corruption that happened in Eskom. That's what we're doing. It's a black hole. We're filling it with taxpayers' money, and we're not holding Eskom strongly to account at all, because they can mess up and we'll bail out. Mess up because it sounds like Eskom's too big to fail, but we have alternatives, you know? And if we took a developmental approach to the provision of electricity, I would suggest, and this came out, as you know, in the kind of just transition work in the NPC, that if we had a rollout of decentralized renewable energy systems, where you could also have different models of ownership, so communities can own, you know, a microgrid or a mini grid, and we did that. We had that developmental approach rather than this, you know, we providing electricity for economic growth.
Which feeds into the mineral energy complex, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I wanted to just take a step back and just hone in on the actual mineral energy, or rather the vested interests in the mineral energy complex, and maybe stop using that particular term now. Is basically saying, like, who are the culprits? Can we say who are the culprits outside of Eskom? Because I think when we discuss our national utility, we tend to discuss it as proxy. It's not just them. And that's the dimension of the discussion, I think, tends to be lost, is that when people are angry about Eskom, yes, it is about the lack of electricity, but we're also talking about city power. We're also talking about the local distributors in the municipalities. We're also talking about the amount that people are paying as citizens for fuel or for paraffin or for the various other energy end use services that we need to do. But we tend to have the chief villain as Eskom, but it's not the only one. Who are the culprits? Yeah. Who are the other culprits?
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely, absolutely. So I would say vested interest, right? So you obviously have vested interest by the coal companies themselves. So they have a vested interest to maintain coal in this country forever, if they could. Right, it's their profits that we're talking about. And then there are differing vested interests, which I won't call like the culprits. But of course, in a situation where, you know, we will have to look at the phase out of coal in the country, workers working in those coal mines would be really concerned about their job security. And so I'm not going to put them in the pot of these are the villains, but that really is an important and very powerful sector that we need to take care of, that we have to ensure through just transition processes that they are protected, that we look at, you know, further job absorption, et cetera, for them as we phase out the coal sector. So, of course, but the main, I would say, culprit resisting change would be those who have ownership of the coal mining sectors. And here, in the past, it was very clear, you know, these are big foreign companies and white capital, etc. But that ownership pattern has also changed over the years. And what really, really is ironic is, you know, there's a flurry of selling off these assets to black empowerment companies, because essentially these people know the writing's on the wall. Coal is going to have to be phased out, and so you have stranded assets, and it will be in the hands of black owners, which is the irony of this all. So certainly there's this kind of mix of interests, the emerging and rising black empowerment companies who are now owning these assets, not just coal mines, but, you know, the kind of value chain interests. So I think that's one level of the vested interest. But then we also have political decision makers who are tied into, not directly maybe having, you know, vested interest in terms of profiteering from these particular companies, etc., but who has a kind, they would have a kind of vested interest in maintaining that overall status quo for whatever it is.
Yeah, and I think the vested interest can or the interest in itself is invested in different ways, right? So some political players, I would say at the local level as well, might own shares in these companies, might run the companies through proxies. But even at a national level, you have a situation where I think, and this is the easiest way to see how vested interests work, is if you just look at the declaration made by members of parliament and members of the legislature, as how much of their money or how much of their savings are in coal companies, are in shares that are publicly listed, yes, or are designed in terms of BEE schemes or new financial literacy or education schemes, and they are highly coal invested. And that shows that if they're gonna have to make a decision between, hey, look, we're gonna have to reduce our focus and our incentives on coal or any of the products that are done around coal, they're not going to do that because they've got a direct financial interest in having this thing continue, even if it's not as direct as running a company.
Welcome to African Voices in the Energy Space, a podcast by Ahadi Collaboration.
But what is quite interesting is what you're saying is that globally, people are moving away from coal, oil, and gas, right? Oh, well, not so much gas, but it's not running at the rate that it used to be. But for particularly with coal, it's becoming more of a stranded asset, and the international companies, the multinational companies, are leaving their stranded assets or the remains or the residue of whatever is left in South Africa in terms of being able to get this resource out to the domestic companies. And the domestic companies don't have the, and this is still to be tested, but they don't have the capability in terms of the finances to be able to ensure environmental sustainability, which is a provision for these companies to be able to continue doing their work, right? Because they have to do some rehabilitation, they have to do social labor plans, but when it is sold on to the local companies, none of that is there. And then communities are left destitute after a company closed down, like maybe like Optimum Coal, for example, and there's no plan as to what happens next.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And you know, Happy, I think that's when I say, you know, the irony about, you know, black empowerment. And what is sad, it's actually not just ironic, it's sad. You know, that black empowerment companies, you know, they see this opportunity and they're not also themselves doing due diligence about this. So scoping out what this is going to look like in the future. And, you know, it's not difficult because if you just did some reading, you would know that coal is out. It has no future. More and more financial institutions are not going to fund coal. We know that already. Big development banks are already saying very clearly they're not going to be funding coal any longer. And so, yes, you know, we obviously have to be afforded the time to transition away from coal, but coal is not going to be a permanent feature in our future energy system. So we should have had, you know, especially black economic empowerment companies doing a little bit of due diligence and not actually, you know, fall for this kind of purchasing of these assets. They wouldn't have, I hope, you know. Mm. So, yeah, it is actually quite. And then in the end, again, we come to the fact that at the end of all of this, it is again poor communities who are going to suffer the most, as you said. Mm. You know, companies leaving mines unrehabilitated already by then. And this is in Mpumalanga when we went on our visits there. You know, communities are firstly high unemployment levels, high unbelievable air pollution. So massive respiratory and health problems in that area. The soil is degraded and polluted. The water is polluted. And so alternative sustainable livelihood options are being shut down for those poor communities. This is a huge injustice. And nobody's being held accountable or liable. I just think there are just many aspects to this this discussion on why we're in this crisis in the first place, the energy system, the electricity system, and the fact that is the biggest injustice of all is that we actually have alternative options that can address both our developmental challenge and the environmental challenge at the same time.
Well, let's get into the alternatives. Maybe not even alternatives, but the solutions, right? Because alternatives presupposes that you have something better anyway, and because you can't get that something better, you will, go to the secondary one. So we've got substitutes. We've got things that can replace the thing that is there and do just as good. What are those? Particularly looking at the fact that what you've identified in the current model is that due diligence is a problem, especially for secondary holders of these assets, these fossil fuel assets, number one. Number two is that good governance has been lacking in order to get us to a place where the system and the situation around the system can foster conducive growth as well as the ability to satisfy basic needs. And you've also identified that accountability and the operational sense in this case would be maintenance hasn't been chiefly understood or prioritized in the current system. So what solutions do we have that can address employment, that I can address the environmental issues, as well as some of these considerations around due diligence, good governance, accountability and maintenance?
Ahadi CoLab is a source of information and a platform that fosters collaboration within its ranks. In the next few weeks, we will be listening in on conversations with members from Ahadi. We hope that these conversations will help to inspire Africa to frame the energy conversation from an African perspective. We hope to discuss the socio-political impacts of energy policies and explore all the questions and answers that we come up with.
Well, I have been mentioning the fact that, you know, one of the best solutions right now, and this is not just me saying this, this is, you know, our own evidence in this country by our research institutions. And more recently, it is, you know, a conservative international energy agency that has just come out with a report on this, right? Renewable energy is the best solution that we have. And as I said, you know, there's been so much improvement in the technologies itself, in the cost of renewables. And the CSIR in this, our CSIR in South Africa, did a study, I think about 2 years or 3 years might be ago, looking at the least cost options between coal, between nuclear, gas, etc. And renewable energy came out as the least cost option for the country. Mm. Now, there you have it. Mm. So what more evidence do you need? And so if we shifted to a rollout, a really scaled-up rollout of renewable energy, not just in this kind of old notion that we need they call it baseload, but there's such new approaches to the delivery of renewable energy and you know, smart grid systems, etc., that we can look at. So you can do, I am more interested actually in the kind of developmental approach to using renewable energy in poor communities. You know, we talk about jobs, but you can actually empower people to be owners of the generation of electricity systems, right? Communities can own a microgrid system, the surplus of which could be sold on to municipalities, for example, right? So there they get an income as a community. So what I'm trying to say is, if we took a diverse approach to the rollout of renewable to address multiple objectives in the country, our poverty and inequality objectives, our employment objectives, our economic objectives, renewable energy provides that because it is extremely mobile. It's very quick to deliver. So it's not going to take the bold program. It won't take years and years. And costs will be running up like kufiles, etc., etc.
Still not finished.
You know, so, I mean, yeah, exactly. Still not finished. And we, again, you know, paying the price. So, yeah, I think that the solution is there. It's renewable energy. This is being backed up by research and by energy agencies internationally. This now just requires the political will to put in the regulatory and policy framework for this kind of rollout. And then for financing, you know, if South Africa demonstrates to the world that this is what they're planning to do, then the financing will come, for sure. You know, there's the Green Climate Fund, there's multilateral development banks, there's bilateral financing, etc. So, you know, what we're doing right now is wasting out. If we didn't bail out Eskom all the time, we'd be able to roll out renewable energy. And when you talk about employment, because, of course, you know, especially for workers, they'd be concerned about this. We shouldn't only look at the kind of project employment. We have to look at the downstream opportunities for jobs, new economic sectors, the fact that workers can own renewable energy as well. Nothing prevents worker, like in the past, worker co-ops becoming owners of these things. So I think we just so stuck in our little narrow way of understanding how the electricity system can become a truly empowering system for the country and people. And we're just stuck in our old ways of thinking, you know, about economic growth, etc., that we're missing this huge opportunity for the country. Huge. So, yeah, my suggestion is, please look at the evidence, look at what the studies are saying. Renewable energy is the solution, and just get on with rolling it out. Now we've got Kapowership. Kapowership. I mean, what do you, I mean, it's just horrifying that, again, we're locking ourselves into a long-term asset that will need to become stranded and will be stranded at some point, an asset that is contributing to emissions. You know, gas is high emitting fossil fuel, no matter what we want to think about it. And we lock this country and its people into a 20-year contract.
A really expensive
Another
one.
Burden.
A really expensive
a
one.
A really
as well.
Expensive one.
And I wanted to just jump in quickly before I know your time is quite short as well. Is that what you're also alluding to is that there is political will, but the political will is not for development. It's just for growth purposes, but also in a path-dependent manner around fossil fuels. So
yeah,
if we were to change this, this would have ramifications, at least in South Africa, as well as the African continent. Would you agree to that?
Absolutely. Look, I, you know, earlier we spoke about policies and blah, blah, blah. So the language and the rhetoric is there. And there are parts of government, for example, that get it. And then there are parts of government that just don't get it, right? And I've seen a recent, I followed a recent interview with the new CEO of Eskom. He seems to be getting it. right? Mm. I mean, I think he seems so. We need to support that. We need to support the kind of clarity that is now emerging. Mm. That we have, we can't carry on with this old fleet of filthy coal plants. Firstly, renewable energy, we are, as you said, you know, I mean, we have all these natural resources that we are just, you people are shocked when they hear South Africa, you know, have not utilized its really important natural resources. I mean, we're sticking to this old dirty fossil.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, there are parts of government and, you know, agencies that get this and are really committed to making the changes. But then there's those parts that actually seemingly having more power holding onto the old. And we have to hold them accountable. We have to push them. This powership must not be underestimated. I mean, how government, you know, the happy. And we have a lot of experiences in this country itself, you know, where activists have taken the government to court on coal, fired power projects, etc., and won. And now, you know, Germany is under pressure because their activists took them to court because they were not ambitious enough in their climate action.
Mm.
And that is going to have to happen in this country. You can't keep on having decision makers making decisions, tying this country into a future that is going to be so despairing. And the unethical behavior of us continuing to pollute as if our pollution just sticks here in South Africa and it's not contributing to the overall, you know, common atmosphere that we all share, and that our neighbors in Africa are going to suffer because of our pollution.
Mm.
I mean, honestly, you know, the decision makers must be held accountable
and
for their decisions.
And I think it then inspires, or rather calls for, a moment like what happened in 1976, where the youth again are stepping up, and it's not just in one particular area, but consistently around the world, even in recent history, the youth are stepping up to say, hey, this is nonsense. We can't continue in this way. Just like, as you said, in the Netherlands and in Germany, as well as in Australia, they've just been held accountable by young people. And as well as in the United States, in the different federal states, things are happening by and being pushed by the youth. And here in South Africa, we're already starting to see semblances of that.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to African Voices in the Energy Space, a podcast by Ahadi Colab. In today's episode, we listen in as Happy Kambule chats to Tasneem Isop.
But yeah. I think in order for us to bring it to a close, I wanted to say that this has been quite illuminating, and especially because I think we need to have more of this conversation so that we can unpack what's really going on, as well as where we are headed. Because there's one thing about the historical issues that led us to where we are, but then there is also the current decisions that are being made that will lead us into even worse situations. And then after a few more years, or even after a few months, we come back and go like, it's even worse now. How did we get here? But we could actually be better capacitated by being able to provide some foresight. So I wanted to thank you. But again, you are sitting around right now. UNFCCC, the COP negotiations are happening. We've had the SDGs. How do we make sure that what the state is putting outside, so it's public face in terms of the international world, how do we hold them accountable? Because they're signing these beautiful things. And I'm not talking about the domestic stuff, right? How do we hold them accountable to the face that they have internationally? Just in closing.
Well, I do think one of the ways that we can do this is to continuously make visible the contradiction, right?
Mm.
Because this is, we have traded, and we're right. I mean, we've generally been a good multilateral player. We believe in multilateralism. We sign up to all these commitments. And it's not just South Africa. There's a lot of this going on in many countries.
Mm.
So, you know, we've signed up to and ratified blah, blah, blah. And it's up to us, the citizens in this country, firstly, to be kept informed. We need to know. We need the information about the implications of all of these things on our lives and our futures, and of course, in solidarity with everybody across the globe. We have to constantly make visible and transparent the contradictions of this government's behavior domestically versus its conduct in the multilateral space. So you're a champion in the multilateral space, but actually back home, you are not. These are the decisions you are making right now. Don't blame, you know, the distant past right now that's contributing to this problem as we see it in the world right now. And the point is just, you know, why are young people doing what they're doing today? Because they get it. They know what's going on, like young people before in our history when we fought against apartheid. And they're willing to step out and not tolerate this kind of abuse. Because you're essentially locking in a future with no hope. So that intergenerational component, the kind of lack of ethics and morality to leave the burdens of the next generation and the existing one of that kind of future. You know, you must pay off the debt of powership. This country wants to still continue with nuclear. We will have to pay for that as well. We will have to pay for, our lives are going to be impacted by unbelievable climate change. You know, the droughts are going to get worse. The fires are going to get worse. The flooding will get worse. Everything, there will be, this is an existential crisis. And it makes it absolutely unacceptable with all the knowledge and the solutions that we have, that the government will continue to bloody-mindedly make choices that will keep us on that dangerous path. That is the bottom line. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Abby. Thank you for all your work.
No, thank you. You're the inspiration. You're the inspiration. So we're going to end it there. Thank you very much. I know I took you 8 minutes above time. I owe you one. I owe you one. I want to say drink or coffee, but you know, I owe you one. Thank you very much, Desmond.
Pleasure, Happy. Okay. Good luck. Okay. Good luck. Good luck.
Okay, thank you. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Join us again in the next 2 weeks as we look forward to another episode of African Voices in the Energy Space. We'll be joined by Siwe Kuse and Batandwa Vazi as they look at energy poverty, a stark look at who has energy in this country. My name is Lerato Ngakane, and I will be your host on African Voices in the Energy Space, a podcast by Ahadi Colab.